Right now it is time for the Berkshire Edge On Air. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a time we welcome in Marcy and Dave and say, Dave. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. We're not only on air, we're in deep space. We are out of this world.
That's right. At least you're not in the deep state.
We're in deep state.
That's true.
All right. Well, speaking about the deep
although
state.
Although we have lots to say about the deep state.
That's what I was going
to
say.
Every week.
Speaking about the deep state, we'll go to the State Department of Environmental Protection.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Well, we have up in the little hamlet of Housatonic, which is part of Great Barrington, has a private water system that has had some troubles recently. In fact, has continuously had problems, but the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection has slapped them with a administrative order telling them to fix their chlorination system to prevent to make the water safe and drinkable.
It's disgusting.
Well, what happens is that there are two issues. One is the chlorination system, and the other is the continuing complaints from customers about rust-colored water. There are 800 customers there, it's a private system, and now there's talk, because of all these problems, there's talk about the water system becoming part of the town water system, that they'll buy out this private system. The problem is that as a private system, they can't access the kind of money and grants that are available to a public system. So they're in a pickle.
And they don't make enough money from 800 customers to be able to to revamp the system.
Yeah. So
it's an old system left over from the time that Housatonic was a mill town, and the mill owned the isn't that right, David?
The water system was originally set up to service the mills themselves, in addition to the workers and residences. But that is long. Those mills are no longer operating, and It's interesting. Over the years, I've seen lots of private water systems issues come up. I remember I was in Bennington, Vermont, when they had a private water system there that whose profits were supposed to go to the hospital, and that's how the hospital was supposed to be financed. However, the expenses of maintaining the system grew so much that there was no profits at all for the hospital. In fact, it was in the water system was in debt, so they finally had to make it a public water system. But in any case,
if that happens, does the person make a profit, or does he just lose the money that he's lost and it gets turned over to the town?
What you mean if they
buy it?
If the town buys it?
Yeah.
Well, I think the town services it. That means that the tax base for the water system, which includes all of Great Barrington, would be able to absorb it and maintain that system. The other problem, really, is another issue, is the pressure at the hydrants, the fire hydrants, which has been an ongoing issue for a number of years, is that those hydrants don't have enough pressure to service a fire. If there was a big fire, they would have trouble, getting enough water to fight it. And that has impacted insurance rates, actually, in the village. So it's an issue.
All right.
Put it that way.
Well, once again, we'll move on, and this time we'll go to the Norman Rockwell Museum.
Oh, the Norman Rockwell Museum. Yes, they had a wonderful ceremony there last weekend to welcome new citizens. And 23 immigrants from 16 different countries were honored by receiving citizenship. And, you know, what do you know? We are a country of immigrants, despite what our president likes to think.
And it was, you know, our reporter went there, and it was a very moving ceremony, you know.
Yeah.
These people value becoming citizens so much more than those of us who are born here value it. You know, they know what they've come from and where they've arrived. And so, I mean, I know this from previous people I've known who've become naturalized, that it's really a very moving ceremony.
And, yeah. And often the test that they take is, you know, most Americans can't pass that test.
That's right. No, I mean, I had a friend in New York who became a citizen. He was a Serb. And, you know, he was studying the Constitution. He knew all the questions. I couldn't answer all the questions.
No, it's an interesting lesson.
It's like religious converts. You know, they are often more religious than the people who were raised in the religion.
Years ago, I helped a friend who asked me how to become a citizen. Put them in touch with Nancy Johnson. They lived in this country for 20-some years, and they became American citizens. And it really was
a nice feeling, and it's absolutely wonderful, and it's been going on since for some time. So let us widen the lens ever so slightly.
Well, you know, what was also moving is that, of course, on the walls at the Norman Rockwell Museum are Norman Rockwell's famous paintings of the Four Freedoms. So it was quite a moving ceremony. And, it's a real ceremony it's a real honor to become a citizen. And maybe we all should go through it. You know, I mean, I'm just thinking that we're not born citizens, but we have to become citizens. And
David, I hate to tell you.
What?
We should have learned it in school.
That's right. you are now mentioning a civics problem.
I'm not blaming teachers. Don't get me wrong. Is it an anti?
Yeah, but this is the problem
that we have. If it's not on a smartphone, people aren't going to look at it.
Oh,
it's unbelievable.
It's awful. Right.
Well, you know, that's true, and you know, we face that in the town meeting situation too, where people are growing up here and they don't really realize how the town meeting form of government operates.
Yeah.
And I'm often said that they should incorporate in the high school education, and maybe an elementary school education as well, an appreciation and an instruction in the local civic government and how it works and how it's everybody's, you know, duty to really participate in one way or another, at least go to town meeting. And become aware of, you know, the issues that are affecting our community and how to better them. So, that's what this ceremony at the Norman Rockwell Museum brings to mind.
All right. You know? Your next story, it looks pretty interesting to me, and that's a local trio creating family documentaries?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Imprint Films. They're doing documentaries of families, family backgrounds, and histories, and it's really interesting. It's a kind of genealogy that you can actually pass on to your children and to their children, so that they have a record of where you came from. I guess we're on an immigrant theme here, aren't we? These three guys have put together this program, and one of the first families they did was Mark Hyman, who's a well-known entrepreneur here in Great Barrington, or lives here. But it, it's it's fascinating. They interviewed his mother and father. And so they're on video talking about where they came from. And so
Are they including documents too, David, and memorabilia in the story? Or just,
yes, they are.
Yeah.
So they can go through, you know, it's really a record. It's a video record of a family, you know, before the memory of the, you know, memories are lose before all that information is lost. You know, the story is written by Andrew Blechman, and he was talking about how, you know, he is sorry that he didn't collect all, you know, the photos and memorabilia from his family, and so it's an interesting story.
All right, well, I want to move on to the next story because I find it is even more interesting, and that. Is when I first looked at the story, so I said to myself, what's this story doing in the Berkshire Edge? But then the local connection, the aunt of one of the Parkland students, an organizer for the March of Our Lives, lives locally, and that has led to a report on how Parkland and Sandy Hook get together in this story.
Well, it's also because we had a local activist who went to Newtown or Sandy Hook, and you know, and wrote back. I mean, it's a local story in Sandy Hook, but it's also a story of, you know, great interest to everybody.
Yeah.
But we actually had a local activist who went and sent us her impressions and photos of the day where the students from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas came to visit with the people at Sandy Hook who had also had the shooting in the school. And it was, you know, it was a very moving day.
Yeah, Cameron Caskey is the student from Florida, Parkland, Florida, who organized this March for Our Lives. And it's, you know, trying to call attention to the dangers of gun violence. And, you know, actually, Great Barrington does have a connection. It's a memory of this because a number of years ago, there was a student, Wayne Lowe, purchased some guns and shot a number of his fellow students and a teacher at
Simon's Rock
Simon's
College.
Bard College at Simon's Rock here in Great Barrington.
And that was one of the first because it was around 1994.
Yeah.
It was, you know, there was the Texas Tower shooting and then there was Simon's Rock, which didn't get such national publicity. There is still a rule about shooting guns within a certain distance from the Simon's Rock campus that continues to be enforced. So that, you know, we're very conscious of these things here in Great Barrington.
Well, when you're talking about gun violence, this next story is also pretty cool about a concert tonight at Tanglewood.
Oh, yes.
Now, when we say tonight, we should say it is Wednesday night because this, you know, anybody that listens to this rebroadcast, podcast or anything, we're talking about tonight. And that,
that's August 15th.
Yeah. Wednesday, August 15th.
That's right. That's tonight at Tanglewood. A Russian pianist and the Jack Quartet are going to are calling attention to the fact that Beethoven withdrew the dedication to Napoleon from some music because he realized that Napoleon was a dictator and a demagogue. And since we're in the age of demagogues and dictators, both abroad and in our country.
It's a worldwide thing. It is.
It's a worldwide thing. And so they're in the run-up to this concert, you know, they've highlighted the fact that this is that what they're calling attention to is notorious demagogues. So you know, this is a theme that seems to be running through all our stories these days.
I love it.
What is that, Edmund Burke? Those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it.
Those who don't learn from history are doomed to.
I'm sorry. Out of all the names you have in here, megalomaniacs, tyrants, I still love, and I always love the word despot. I love despots. I really.
I mean, am a despot.
To me, that seems to be the lowest of low.
Really,
you're a despot.
Well,
you're a despot.
Marshall, I don't think we've reached the lowest of low yet.
But we're on the way,
and we'll have to think up a new term.
But listen to the words. You're a megalomaniac. Sounds strong. You're a tyrant. Sounds strong. You're a despot.
That sounds disgusting.
You know, I just need to jump in here for 1 second because, unfortunately, thanks to multiple screens and what has happened is people's lenses have become really, you know, it's now and it's what they know. But I just want to say that in all the joking around that we do, we're not so far away from the Holocaust. And
No, but
I think it's really important that, again, in context, sorry to interfere, but just that is kept in for all of the megalomaniacs and demagogues, et cetera, that we're dealing with. You know, that wasn't so very, very far away.
All right.
You wonder whether we're not approaching something like that.
Well, therefore, the quote.
We are living, unfortunately, in very, very intense times. I won't even say interesting times. Intense would be the word.
Yeah,
right
the
now.
Interesting times is a Chinese curse.
Yeah, that's right.
Well,
may you live in interesting times. Well, we are living in interesting times.
But now let's make it feel better because I like this next story about humanizing yourself by going to Tanglewood and hanging out with a bunch of other people and mosquitoes.
That are not despots.
Well, no, she didn't mention the mosquitoes.
I know.
No, let's be fair here. It was a story. This is a story by our columnist, Carol Owens, who was pointing out how people gather of all kinds of races, ages, religions and so on, gather on the lawn at Tanglewood, thousands of people, without, you know, in a kind of, it's a model of humanity enjoying the best of itself, you know, rather than the very divisive and, there are no walls there at Tanglewood to, you know, prevent certain people from not getting close to the musicians or anything like that. You know, she's just talking about a different kind of ideal and picture of what humanity can be, and that she thinks that this is a model that maybe should be emulated worldwide.
But isn't it emulated just by virtue of the cultural? I mean, the vast cultural there are many festivals, wonderful festivals during the summer that people go to that. That aren't divided.
No, it's true. But on the other hand, you know, here we are in a country that is falling increasingly into division where people can't go to, they can't enjoy the same events.
Well, all I'll say is I'll be willing to bet you if you go to a Tanglewood concert, there's not too many red Magna hats.
Well, that may be. Who knows? I mean,
but they're probably.
All right. Well, I want to move
on. Who knows what redneck is? And, you know, there are people of all different, you know, economic strata who go there.
Yeah, that's true.
I want to go to the last story because we only have about a minute left, and that is smoke signals from the swamp.
Smoke signals, yes. Well, that is our observer, our political observer, Duke Snyder, who takes a look at what is going on in the wider world of Washington, and has written a rather cutting picture of the Trump administration. And in this particular edition exposition of his or her
observations
has to do with that Maria Butina, the femme fatale Russian spy, who seems to have ensnared, embedded herself, you might say, in the NRA, as well as some members of the Trump administration.
She's in jail now, isn't she? She's being retained.
She's being held.
Yeah.
Is she being held in jail, or is she like on house arrest?
No, she's in pretty serious difficulties.
Yeah,
so.
she's in jail.
And she has, you know, obviously.
She now has a jumpsuit that matches her hair.
But anyone who's really interested in, you know, in spy, it should grab the other woman.
But you know, this is a John Le Carre novel. It's waiting to be written. Don't you think?
No. It's been written by Daniel Silva. It's called The Other Woman.
Oh, really?
Oh, okay. I don't know that book.
The whole series is worthwhile, but that's the most recent one.
All right. Well, hey, we're out of time, guys.
Oh, we are. Okay.
Wow, that went fast.
And we didn't talk about the water bottle ban once. Okay.
Did we report to you? We reported last week that the ban was upheld.
I know.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
That's why I said it at the end.
Yeah.
All right, guys. We'll speak to you next week.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
TheBerkshireEdge.com on the web, and that is the Berkshire Edge on air.